broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva's first choice for NPR News.
With the arrival of the cold weather, the homeless are now seeking shelter on the peninsula. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. First, some national stats. There were around 636,000 homeless in 2011 in the nation, according to the federal government count. Overall, there has been a decline, actually, of about 1% between 2009 and 2011. And among the homeless nationally, just over 392,000 found shelter. Nearly 400,000 were individuals. Another 236,000 were people in families. And only 107,000 were actually chronically homeless. Here, of course, on the Eastern Shore, there are a number of shelters that the homeless may seek out. And our guest this morning, we have in studio with us Sister Marilyn. She's from Joseph's House. Also, we hope to be joined by Jim Barnes with the Christian Shelter. So, well, welcome, Sister. I noticed, by the way, that it is snowing even as we speak. If I'm homeless, what am I doing now?
Well, you may be going to one of multiple places that have some services to offer. You may be coming to Joseph House on Boundary Street, where you can get breakfast, hot lunch. You can get a shower if you need it, clothing, and did I say breakfast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's part and parcel. And you can get your clothing washed as well. You can stay there till about 1:30. And then from there, or you may be leaving the Christian Shelter at this point. You may have spent the night overnight. You may also be going over to Halo, which is behind Giant. There the homeless can stay almost throughout the day. They can get breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. There is also a wonderful place, Wicomico Presbyterian. There's an RN called Donna Clark who does service over there, and oftentimes the homeless can go there from about 9 to 2 and get coffee and maybe soup. Or they just may be wandering the streets. They may be at the library. The library is a big magnet for the homeless. The library is actually very hospitable, very, very warm and welcoming. They can sit there. They can do computer. They have computer help. They have job assistance over there. They may even be in a laundromat. Or if they have a few little coins in their pocket, they may be hitting the local Wawa's or one of the fast foods or something like that, or maybe Royal Farms. Or they may be just harboring in their tent cities. That could be.
The tent cities, what is that like? What, I mean, to be out in the cold like that?
Well, as you can imagine, there are a few isolated ones that kind of stay to themselves. But there are others that kind of harbor together in little tents. Actually, some of their tents are very efficient and very effective. They have their propane heaters. They have their little food supplies, their little something to prepare something hot food. I can't even think of it. You know.
Sort of a hot plate kind of thing.
Thank you, yeah. Hot plate. And they just stay inside and weather out the whatever the weather is doing. Sometimes they're out just looking for something to do. Sometimes it's employment, of course. There's the one-stop job. Some of them head over there, see what's out there for the day. And others are just, it's a good relational thing in many of these tent cities. They kind of watch out for one another. But at the same time, they also have the fear of having their stuff taken. It may not be from the people, you know, within their little confines there, but nothing is really safe. Many of them are backpacking through the city. Can't always tell them from a Salisbury University student with their own backpacks.
So I mean, and this, there's this constant sort of fear that you have to sort of collect all of your stuff, whatever it is, and take it with you then.
Very much so. You know, and anything is fair game. You know, if you're in need and somebody has it, people will lift it. It's one of those things. I need it, so I can take it. It can be as simple as deodorant, socks, shoes are a big thing, something warm that helps them out. So there's always that precaution. I would imagine even their propane heaters and things like that in their tents could be fair game if if someone weren't watching.
We're joined by Jim Barnes. He was a Christian shelter here in Salisbury. We were talking a moment ago about the fact, as you probably noticed, it is now snowing outside. So the temperatures have dropped. We'll see how long that lasts. But it is expected actually to be cold over the weekend, even when it isn't snowing. And I'm going to ask you the same question I asked your sister Marilyn. What are the homeless doing right now as this snow comes down, you think?
Well, I guess that depends on which homeless we're talking about. There are those who are in shelters. I suspect that represents maybe as many as 60% of the homeless folks in the area, 50 to 60% that are in shelters and do have a safe place to be. At the Christian shelter, for example, on a day like today, when it's cold and snowing out, the shelter is open up during the daytime so they can stay inside and out of the weather during the day. But I suspect there's a fair number of homeless folks who aren't in shelter, who don't have any regular shelter space. And for them, they're just toughing it out there, some in the woods, in camps in the woods, and some in abandoned vehicles or abandoned buildings. And when it gets cold or the weather's bad, they've got a tough row to hoe.
So what would during a cold day like this, what would be the average day look like for somebody who's homeless?
The average day for somebody who's homeless.
I mean,
there's any such thing as an average day.
Obviously there are differences, obviously, between one person and another. But one of the things I think we tend to miss is, what is it like to be homeless? I mean, I drove by just the other day, somebody out towards on 50, and they were standing there, right? But I have no idea, as I drive by, what that experience is like in terms of a day-to-day experience.
Well, I suppose the initially part of the daily experience is finding food to eat, warm clothing or enough to keep warm. Those would be the chief things that you'd spend most of your time looking for, making sure that you've got a place to eat and or food to eat, and you've got something to keep warm, reasonably warm. And when it's snowing like this, I suppose another part is scurrying for shelter. Where can I find a place to get out of the snow? And another, I suppose, big daily issue for homeless people is safety. Is where can I be safe? Where can I be sure that somebody's not going to beat me up or mug me? Those issues are things that a homeless person would face every day and have to, you know, make whatever plans they can each day to make sure that today I'm going to have food to eat and I'm going to have enough stuff to keep warm, to keep from freezing out here. And hopefully I can find a roof over my head. And that takes some doing around here. And other kinds of services that you might have wants some medical help, something of that sort. That means figuring out a way to get from the social services building, and maybe you got to see somebody about Social Security because you didn't get a Social Security check. That means you got to get all the way out to Northwood Drive to Social Security, and then you may want to look for a job or some help with income. That means you got to get all the way out west to the one-stop job market, which is now conveniently located a good distance from town, and it costs $3 each way to get a bus out there. And if you don't have the $3 for the bus, then you got to figure, how am I going to get a bus ticket or a way to get out there? So these are the kinds of just daily survival issues that somebody who's homeless has to, and each day is a new day, and you start trying to figure out for each day, okay, how am I going to get these things taken care of today?
Most of us, when we think about the homeless, we don't think about them having an income.
Well, they can be eligible for a program where they can get $185 a month. It doesn't cover much of anything. You know, it's survival.
Which program is
survival.
That?
It's called a TDAP.
Okay.
It's a temporary.
Temporary disability.
Yeah. They may have a long-term disability to which they're applying or have to apply or are trying to get. But at least temporarily, they can have that kind of money. They're also eligible for food stamps. The one thing that food stamps, at least for the homeless, is a drawback. It doesn't cover any hot food. Many's the one would like that hot cup of coffee in the morning or maybe something warm to eat. And if they don't have an access area or if they can't just stop at a local fast food or a local or Royal Farms or something like that, they can't just pick that up with food stamps. Although they do get them, and that's how sometimes they survive in the after hours when there aren't lunches or dinners offered at various and sundry places.
Or it poses them for them another little problem that they got to figure out how to deal with today, and that is, where can I go where there's a microwave so I can heat up my ramen noodles that I got with my food stamps?
That's a classic. They make up what they call a hookup. Ramen noodles is the base, and everything else goes in it, and it makes the meal for the day. As I'm leaving here today, I'm heading over to Joseph House to pick up someone who's going out to get glasses, and she needs a ride to get these glasses. Fortunately, the Lions Club has helped her with those, so she'll get them free. But
now, do you actually help people with transportation needs to get back and forth to these various places?
Not regularly, Jim.
Yeah, because we're not able to do that either. Transportation is a tough problem.
Absolutely.
And one of the curious solutions that they came up with, I've been about four years beating the bushes to try to get some kind of a bus ticket arrangement for homeless folks, because transportation is a hugely difficult thing. I've written letters and talked about it and keep running into stone walls. Well, finally, they came up with a program, a federal government-funded program to help with transportation. But it blows my mind what they came up with. It's vouchers for taxis. And the amount of money that the taxpayers have to come up with to pay people for taxi rides instead of a bus ticket is incredible.
I know what you're saying, Jim.
It's a weird solution.
The ladies at the Village, the Village of Hope, use those.
Yeah, we do at Christian Shelter.
Sure.
For a person to get to the one-stop job market, where they can look for jobs and get help with a variety of different problems out there. But to go back and forth from the center of town to the one-stop job market that's $32 for a round trip. We have up to 50 people at Christian Shelter, many of whom really need to get to the one-stop job market every day. That's $32 a person for each trip. That can cost the taxpayers a lot of money.
It was probably a wonderful move for them as far as their building and the expansion, but it was a hard one for the ones who have to trek that far.
Yeah,
because when we think about income, I mean, one of the things that I ran across is that there's one survey that says there's no city or county has a minimum wage that can afford a typical one-bedroom apartment.
That's right.
As is the cost of rent and utilities for a typical two-bedroom apartment increased, I think it was like the year before last, by something like 41%. So that even if you're lucky to get a job at a minimum wage, you could still find yourself without a home.
Well, we find that the minimum that you can get even a single bedroom apartment, or it's not even a bedroom, sometimes it's just the room in the house with a shared bathroom, is $75 a week. Again, a job takes a couple of weeks sometimes before they even get a paycheck. They have to hold back some money. So it does take some to get that deposit, And then that first week's rent or the first month's rent.
Yeah, and it's it can be a demoralizing experience to do that when you do get a job. And say you get a minimum wage job or a little over minimum wage in a chicken plant. And it's hard work. It's grueling. At the end of the day, particularly if you're doing things like live hanging, it's heavy work and it takes its toll on you physically. So you come home at the end of the day and you're aching and hurting and tired. The end of the week, you get this little paycheck, and immediately most of that paycheck has to go to the landlord. For even if what you're renting is a weekly rental room in a place that's overrun with roaches and mice and drugs and alcohol and that sort of thing. But most of your paycheck immediately goes, gives you very little left to think about buying food or taking care of any other kind of needs. So over a period of time, that can get pretty discouraging for somebody who's trying to work hard and they're trying to make it and get ahead. But wow, after a while, they say, gee, why should I do this when I can go sell drugs on the corner and make three or four times as much money and with half the effort? There are some realities, economic realities out there that make it pretty tough.
One of the other things, there's obviously when we tend to think of the homeless, we think about like single men, that kind of thing. But obviously, families are a key component. Yeah. Nationally, I think families make up something like 40% of the homeless, which is a pretty big chunk. One report, I think it was the mayor's report in 2010, said that 68% of cities had to turn away homeless families with children because of the lack of shelter. What's the situation with the families now? And have we seen an increase? I think Jim and I we talked a few years back, just as the onset of the recession. Well, what are we looking at? What is the situation with the families now, say, Jim, as opposed to what we were talking about back then? Have we seen continuing increase? We have the unemployment figures, I guess, that are coming out today. We've seen unemployment obviously go down. But what are you seeing out there in terms of families?
Oh, yes. The definite increase, steady increase in the number of families. And it's a little bit frustrating because one of the things that motivated us to undertake some renovation and expanding our facility at Christian Shelter was the fact that we had to turn away families. And when that's a hard thing to do. And after you've done it a couple of times, you begin to think, it's almost like God is saying to you, hey, what are you doing? You've got some space there that you use for storing clothing and stuff like that. You better turn that into family rooms so you won't have to turn those people away. So we did. We undertook a very major project to build new family rooms in a section. Well, as soon as we opened up those rooms back last summer, last June, as soon as we opened them up, they were all filled, and we still are having to turn families away. So that it continues to be a problem, and I think with the economy and the job situation pretty tough and tight right now, that contributes to families. In fact, I suppose there are a lot of working people out there that are one or two paychecks away from suddenly finding an eviction notice on their apartment or their house, and that's a grim experience.
What kind of special issues do you think come up for families? I mean, one of the stats I ran across was something like 2 million additional American children will fall victim to the foreclosure crisis over a 2-year period. That was startling. Now, obviously, not all of those are going to become homeless, but nonetheless, they're leaving homes that they probably may have known all of their lives, for that matter. What kind of special impact do you think the homelessness has on families in general, but particularly children? Either one of you.
It does. We see an effect on the children in the shelter, and I'm sure you guys do.
Psychologically, that has to be a crushing blow for kids. You know, it's something that takes a long time to let go of and to get over. And the parents, it's such a crushing blow for them because they've always been the caretakers for their children. I think there's a long-lasting effect that we may never see until they grow up and they have their own children and they remember that. You see stories like that on television sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if we're lucky, we can refer them to places that you know, like the Christian shelter, or even a longer term like the Village of Hope, which takes, this is just for women and women with children. The men, you know, if they're part of the package, they often have to fend for themselves and see what they can find for work. But yes, it's a real truism. People are so tight on their mortgage or their rental or their next
Well, and when you stop and think about it, you know, you see, for example, a woman often relatively young, probably with limited education and job experience, with two or three children, and she's in a situation where now, even in a shelter situation, she's got to try to figure out how in 30 days she's going to find a job, start getting enough income, get into an apartment, and in the meantime, try to deal with these children. And it's an incredibly difficult thing. It puts an awful lot of stress on the mother. The result we see at the shelter often in terms of children who aren't not being supervised a lot of the time. And that's a little traumatic thing for the kids, too, to suddenly find themselves without a bedroom that they sleep in and a bed they sleep in and a place to put their things and a sense of home. And now all of a sudden they're in a shelter sharing space with lots of other people they don't even know. It's a difficult thing for the kids anyway. And so in a situation like that, children tend to act out a little more often, get angry or upset with things. The parents are rushed and trying to take care of their business. And so it's a hugely stressful thing. And they end up having to deal with their children in a way, well, the rules say kids aren't supposed to be running in the halls in the shelter. And mom is trying to keep the kids from running in the halls. And the only way she knows how to do it right now is to yell and holler and slap and smack and stuff like that. Or she just is too darn tired to pay any attention, so she just doesn't pay any attention. And the kids run wild, and the staff has to figure out how to get that under control. So there's a lot of that. It's a huge stressful thing.
The other challenge for people in that situation, especially on the single parenting side, they've stopped the voucher program for daycare right now. It's just at a standstill. They have no more funding for it. So what do you do with your children when you have no place to place them? And you may not have a relative close by that either can or is able to. We find, and I'm sure Jim does, there are many grandparents who end up taking the children if there are someone, you know, if there is someone around that can do that, a close friend or relative, anyone. They get kind of tossed, and I'm sure they're hungry many times. The schools have seen that. That's why the school food programs are so vital, because these kids often go out without something if they're not in a shelter situation or if they're in a temporary relative's house or even a friend who lets them sleep in the entryway or something like that. It can be as dire as that sometimes.
Yeah, and that's probably a situation that there's a lot more of going on than we know, is families doubling up in a very small, crowded apartment where the children have to sleep on the floor or in a chair or on a sofa. And there's probably a lot more of that going on than any surveys discern or turn up.
You know, they're doing a count right now.
That's right,
the
yes.
Homeless, and sometimes people doubly avoid that. You know, they're wary. They're not sure, even though they reap some of the goodness that the government can offer. You know, the food stamps and even what they call the Obama phones, the phones that you can get for
okay.
little or nothing. Yeah. It's amazing. You know, many of them have a little one of those.
Two or three
vital
things around there, but. Nonetheless, you know, there's a certain fear and distrust, so some of them will not be counted. And some of them are harbored in places where you can't call it home. There's nothing to say that that's a stable environment. Even the people who get these kinds of assistance from them have to have some type of an address. You should see the stacks of mail sometimes we get for the homeless that are using a temporary address just so they can receive some of those benefits.
Well, any benefits that are provided through the HUD, Department of Housing and Urban Development grants, HUD defines what a homeless person is to be eligible to receive any of those benefits, and their definition is real narrow. Their definition excludes folks who are doubled up in a friend or relative's home or apartment. They don't get counted as homeless. But most of the impacts of homelessness of people in a shelter are the same on people who are jammed into someone else's apartment and in fact, sometimes it could be even worse because when you've got two or three families sharing an apartment that's barely big enough for one family, why they can have much more of a struggle over food, for example, at the shelter. Why you've got a nice meal, a nice hot meal that you know you can sit down to and get plenty to eat. But when you're jammed into somebody else's apartment, you never know when there's going to be food and how much there's going to be. And in the shelter, at least you get to lay in a bed to sleep in at night. But in those situations, you don't. And we have people fairly regularly coming into the shelter, families, who have been living in a car, in a vehicle, sometimes for 1, 2, 3 months. I can't imagine what that's going to be like. Good Lord, that's got to be. If there's 3 or 4 children, and one or two parents, and this is their home, the inside of a car. How do you do that? Ooh.
Yeah. go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's another element even of homelessness in the abuse situations. Mm. You know, the people who are fleeing. You know, that's where places like Life Crisis come in, and they literally are homeless because they're running from something.
What about the potential for harm to the children? Who are with families who are homeless? I mean, that was one of the things that struck me is that you're out there, and if you have your child or a set of children, for that matter, the more complicated it gets, I would think the more dangerous it could become for them.
Sure, sure. Not only is it dangerous out there,
right?
And do they get somewhat maligned for being in this situation? Mm. Kids can be very wonderful, but they can also be very quick to spot something that's not quite right. But you also don't always know with whom you're going to leave your children because you're in a tough situation. And you don't know that they're going to be the utmost of caretakers or the loving, responsible parenting figure that they need, you know?
Yeah.
So,
there's
a lot of...
When you're fear. Desperate for child care for your children and you have to leave them with somebody that who knows what kind of a situation these kids are going to be in during the day in child care. And again, it's not documented, but I suspect there's a lot more abuse and exploitation of children out there, even if it's only because the person who's stuck taking care of the kids is tired and old and doesn't know how to handle the kids and therefore, you know, can lock them in a room just to keep them quiet and all. So I suspect there's a lot of potential for a lot of harm to kids in any of those kind of homeless situations.
Now, I guess finally, just real quickly, I guess the churches have also gotten together during this time in which you have places where at least the homeless can go and get something. Tell me a little bit about that operation, because it's been, I guess, for a few years now, I guess, here in Salisbury.
It's called the Community Emergency Shelter Project, and it's been wonderful. It's been in operation for about 9 years now, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's been a wonderful cooperative effort on the parts of the many churches and the people that volunteer at those churches to cover it. It usually starts about, well, actually I have the papers here, January 5th through March 8th right now. No, excuse me, March 30th, which are the heavy month of winter.
That's right.
So it's been a great thing. They've been so
wonderful.
And
it's been
in
the churches.
Started.
It's not only been great for the homeless folks that are taken in those, but it's also been a great experience for people in the church. I think those who have helped out with those programs have come away discovering things that they never knew before. And it stirs up some real spiritual energy in the church, I think.
Yeah, sometimes, a lot of times, we tend to go about our business and really not notice the experience of others. We've been talking with Jim Barnes. He's with the Christian Shelter here in Salisbury. His sister Marilyn, who's with Joseph's House, and we've been talking about the homeless as the weather, of course, turns cold. And you have been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.